I set this up so we may be live, we may not. Who knows? Hi, everyone. What do I say? I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, not in the same room, but we are still together, what we do is we make the podcast of champions. And what we do is talk Big Ten football. We're doing that. We're going to do it today. I am in the desert right now, so we're doing this a little bit differently. David has most of the responsibilities, and I can't believe we're actually doing this, because if I have to hand him responsibilities, the show usually doesn't happen. But David, congrats to you. If it's working, that's great. I feel like
I'm looking at the YouTube right now. We are live.
I feel like a passenger princess. This is amazing. Like, instead of me running everything, I can just sit here, drink my water, and talk about Big Ten football. It's great.
It's beautiful. We're excited. The reason for the delay in the show is because of the continuous shit show that is UCLA football. But here we are now. We are live.
We are live. And we want to hear from you. I think we have a lot of questions, David. Big10cast@gmail.com is the email. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. Tweet us at B1G Podcast. And if you want to listen to the podcast, we're live on YouTube, which is awesome, the Podcast of Champions. But on Apple and Spotify, those are the main places people get the Podcast of Champions. You can leave us a 5-star rating on either one of those platforms. Spotify actually makes you listen to it. On Apple, you can leave us a review. And on Spotify, you can comment on the latest episodes. And we have some comments, but do we have any new reviews, David?
We don't, because you're trying to divide and conquer our audience and try to convert them to Spotify for some God knows what nefarious likely reason. I know, they know, the only place to leave a review is on iTunes, Apple iTunes.
iTunes doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. It's just rebranded, okay? But I'm not here to follow their corporate mandates, okay? iTunes.
We got Nick. He left a comment on our last episode. Truly the most mediocre and beautiful podcast on Spotify. Spotify, as our intrepid hosts have previously declared, is the only conduit that delivers the content we so desperately need. Does Cignetti kill? Does he know the score? These questions and little else are unanswered by the host that love their jobs, and as much as Jeff and Rob make it their primary goal to fill Spotify with their dulcet tones. In other words, love the podcast. Great work, guys. Now time to stop commenting before I run out of care. Nice. So I think we're going to have to send Nick a Trader Joe's gift card.
Because you're encouraging them to post on Spotify.
I'm just saying. There's like five of them from the last episode.
Which has almost no value for us whatsoever.
Year of the Horse says there's a dozen of us. Dozen. Roe Murphy, we are Spotify fans. We are loud and we are proud. Jeff thinks he can stop us, but we will remain. This platform has always been the superior one, and Apple Podcasts is yesterday's platform. I've been listening on Spotify since day one. Do you hear the people sing, Jeff? It's a podcast platform revolution.
Do you hear the people sing?
I think we should send Roe Murphy a gift card too.
Oh wow! I think we may have had money coming in. Cha-ching!
No way!
But we also have it twice, which makes me think there was an error made from Grant.
Do we get the money of error? Like in the
I
error?
Think so. I think okay, Grant. Perfect. I think you've given us $10. If that's okay, Grant. That's great. Thank you. Grant says, listening while I can on the plane ride to DC to watch my Huskies take on the Terps. Go Dogs!
Go Dogs.
Love it. Thank you, Grant. You're the man. He says, whoops, I sent two super chats. You can thank me and thank Poor Reception in the Air for making me do it twice. Appreciate you, Grant. That is the most on-brand super chat for this show I think we've ever received.
I accidentally thanked you twice. Yes.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. We have no iTunes. No new iTunes reviews.
Wow, Spotify's crushing.
I know.
And I don't even listen on Spotify. I just was trying to make people aware that there's another platform. It's not like I'm not shilling
he's
for
getting
it.
He's paid by Spotify. He's not telling you that, but he's getting paid by Spotify.
No, I wish I was. That would be
several
would...
million dollars a year.
You know who does pay us, though? Those people in MyBookie.
Right, maybe.
I know we have a lot of NFL fans here, and maybe you go to MyBookie to do some betting, but you don't have to wait till Sunday. You can bet on the Big Ten. You can bet on the Saturdays. You're missing half the fun if you don't get in on the action. I know everyone does their fantasy and stuff for the NFL, but you want to get in there for Big Ten football. There's so many fun games. Now, you don't want to listen to our picks because the last 2 weeks have been absolute dog crap, but it's cooking. There's upsets. There's blowouts. There's weird covers. My bookie lets you hit it all. Game lines, player props, and more. Everything you need before the pros even kick off. When Sunday rolls around, you're already up. Get into your NFL picks at that point. My bookie's got it all under one roof. You can win big on the NFL's Super Contest and Survivor Pools. And if you're new to MyBookie, use our promo code POC. Any bet you choose up to 500 big ones is fully covered. Make your play, and if it doesn't hit, you get it right back when you opt in using our bet back bonus token. MyBookie, where bettors win together, because bragging's good, but cashing in is better. And I actually got an email, Dave, from one of our listeners who I guess they didn't get the bet back bonus token. I made sure with MyBookie, I think there was an error. So email us if there was any kind of problems, but they should have it fixed now. So go check out MyBookie and the promo code's POC.
Bet back bonus, baby.
Go check it out. I do like that. You can make a big bet. And
I just like saying it.
It's kind of weird to say. Can I say something real quick? Like, I was looking at my phone for that Spotify thing, and my eyes are getting bad, like, for the reading stuff. It was hard to read. Like, I was, and there was, you know, there were some thesaurus words in there, so it was not.
You need
the reading glasses.
You need reading glasses,
buddy. I think I'm going to have to at some point. That was tough.
You got to change the font on your phone, too.
I could, yeah, I haven't done that either. I could, yeah, it was really small, like on the Spotify.
You got to change it. You got to change it.
I'm going to read the emails that we get. We got a lot of emails on the phone too. So we'll see what happens there. I don't have my board here because I'm at my place out in the Palm Springs area. So we can't do all the fun. So David has to do a lot of work.
I know. Ben Roundup.
do. Like I said, our picks were hot garbage. We are still tied. What do I have? Yeah, we were 2-4 each of us against the spread. Again, there were some really tough ones.
There was a very tough beat. At least one very tough one.
Some tough beats. We are now under 500. And I don't know. I think maybe 1 year we might have been. We'll get back. We're 25-26 against the spread. So that wasn't very good. But we got to go through our roundup and talk about all these teams. So should we start that now?
Yeah, let's do it.
We have number 18.
UCLA Bruins. What's the song? Or actually, we'll just make noises. Rawr!
Yeah. It's hard to figure out what they did. And then they were going to number 16.
The Northwestern Wildcats.
Rawr! Nice.
You like that? That was pretty good. Yeah, so Northwestern was a 6.5-point favorite. I took Northwestern, Ryan took UCLA, and UCLA somehow covered. Northwestern won, of course, because this is the UCLA 2025 season. Northwestern won 17-14. What I was struck by most in this game...
We're 17-0, right?
Yes. Okay. What I was struck by most in this game is that... these are two terrible football teams. UCLA was terrible in the first half, and then Northwestern, like, UCLA should not have covered. Like, that shouldn't have happened in this game.
They very much should have and did.
Northwestern in the second half drove the field. So in the third quarter, they drove 10 plays, 38 yards, and then punted on 4th-and-10 from the UCLA 37. Don't do that. Then they went 17 plays, 67 yards, got it all the way to the UCLA 2, where they attempted a field goal. Don't do that. You're running for like minimum 4 yards every single time you run the football. What are you doing? So they didn't score in the second half, which allowed UCLA to make this a little bit prettier than it was. But I think what I took away from that experience, the experience of watching this game, which was truly a capital letter experience, is that both teams are terrible. And I'm going to give Tim Skipper his props. He's an interim coach. We're not judging the coaching at UCLA. Northwestern is a terribly coached football team. Like David Braun, I'm not sure he knows how the game is played. Because do not kick that field goal from the two. Not in reality, also not in the context of this game. UCLA blocked the kick, which is why I bring that up, because it was important for the potential for covering.
Right.
UCLA ended up covering. Two terrible football teams. Probably the last reasonable chance for a UCLA win this year.
So I think punting from the 37 makes sense. I mean, you could get 17 yards of field position, Dave. Like,
that's exactly what they got, because they did then punt it into the end zone.
So crazy. Yeah, a couple of bad football teams. I got to try to do a little iPad with this because this was the second window. I was back in Illinois for this one. But yeah, I was just kind of watching and I'm like, uh-oh, we're not going to cover this one. But UCLA came through. I figured they'd have a little fight, and I didn't think Northwestern was that good. We got them at 16. We'll see. They could move down. I think that the bottom three, it could be a lot of fun. Now, UCLA's, I think, pretty locked up, especially because they just, you know, lost to Northwestern. But who knows? You know, we could see something weird happen. But that 16-17 battle could be a good one, because number 17 is 17.
Wisconsin Badgers. I did a facial expression for those watching at home.
Nice. They were on
the bottom. That's actually, I was doing a beaver. What is a badger? What does a badger do? Oh, badger, sorry. I screwed this up. Badger, 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 yes. Badger, 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 like, badger, 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 snake. It's a snake. Oh, it's a snake.
Oh, you added the snake part.
Yeah.
Yeah. You forgot your own bit.
I know, dude. I don't know. I'm operating on very little.
That's okay.
Yeah.
We got number 15.
Number 15, Rutgers Scarlet Knights. I'm red. Taking on who?
Number 12.
The Minnesota Golden Gophers. I'm golden. Eat up your lawn. So this was a 31-28 Minnesota win over Rutgers. In this game, sir, I picked Rutgers under the assumption that both teams are kind of booty and you don't allow too many points in a booty game. And 4.5 was far too many. You, a moron, you took Minnesota. They didn't cover the 4.5.
They win by 3?
Yeah, and so I nailed this one. Yeah. I walked away from this one thinking, again, that both teams are just kind of booty. I thought, actually, like, offensively, they were better than expected. Rutgers, between Antoine Raymond and Ethan Calikmanis, they looked okay. But they couldn't stop anything. Drake Lindsay looked really good for Minnesota. But I think both these defenses are just not great.
Yeah. Minnesota, I just read the beginning of the game, Rutgers was, like, dominating everything, and then they started to fix things. But at the beginning, it looked like Rutgers was going to pull away and just blow them out, and I was like, oh, this isn't good. And then Minnesota came back and I was like, okay, maybe we'll get the cover there, but it was just too much. But they really, it looks like Minnesota was sleepwalking through the beginning of this game. You could see little portions for both these teams that looked pretty good and other portions that just looked god awful. So
no, both teams are butt.
Okay, I'll trust you on that one. Number 14.
The Purdue Boilermakers. We're making a train. They were on a bye.
They were on a bye. And then we have number 13.
Michigan State Spartans. I don't know. We're trying to conquer Troy. I don't know. What do Spartans do?
Did you adjust the power rankings at all?
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, let me know if you don't like these, because, again, I had to do these. All right.
They were all set up by.
Yeah. Number 12, Minnesota, we talked about. Number 11.
Nebraska Cornhuskers. We're planting corn. They were on a bye.
They were on a bye, too. Okay. Then we have number 10.
USC Trojans.
And they were on the road taking on now number five,
the Illinois Illini. Ryan.
Yes.
Did USC win this football game?
They did not.
What time zone did it take place in?
It was in the Central.
Hey! That's not Eastern.
USC did not look good.
Mm. Hey, but here's the thing. Obviously, it was very unfair circumstances because they had to play in another time zone, right?
At 9 in the morning.
After playing in a different time zone the previous week. That's a rare circumstance that could not have been foreseen at any point when anybody, say, like a particular school was thinking about making the move and blowing up a historic league and going to the Big Ten, right?
Yeah, I mean, USC just followed UCLA. They obviously probably shouldn't have followed their lead.
Like, you simply could not have imagined a circumstance like this where you might play a night game in the West Coast and then a morning game the next week in Big Ten country.
Yeah, we both got this wrong. We thought USC had looked really good. The offense for USC is still elite. Jaden Maiava, Bill Connolly has him as the number one ranked quarterback in the country. Mekhi Lemon leads the nation in receiving yards. Like, their offense looks
super elite. I mean, so if you had to put a fraction to it, right? Like, just a fraction relative to how many Indiana scored against Illinois last week. Like, what was it? Like, was it like, if you just had to assign, like, just like one of those basic fractions, like a quarter or two thirds, like, was it, where like, was it on that fraction?
In the half area.
In the half range, like one over two, right?
Yes.
Got it. So they're elite, 50% as good as Indiana.
Well, that's a little different story, but yes.
Okay. I'm just trying to get our terminology, our base assumptions correct.
They have some elite players on there. Mm-hmm. They don't really punt. They punted once in this game.
Yeah.
They did turn the ball over a couple times. Yeah. But the issue was, David, on defense got really bad. So that Indiana team you mentioned sacked Luke Altmyer 9 times. USC comes in the game leading the nation in sacks. They got one from a corner blitz. Illinois just pushed them around up front, and the defense couldn't stop anything.
If you had to put a multiplier on it, right? Hmm. Like, they were X times as bad as Indiana's defense as last week, right? So Indiana gave up 10 points. So if you were to apply a multiplier to USC's defense, what would you like?
Over three. Yeah.
Actually, it's pretty easy. It's 3.4.
Yeah.
Yeah. They gave up 34 points.
34 points. It was not good. There was some a few people that cover USC, not really, that were doing this food poisoning gate. They did, you know, Kamari Ramsey, they're probably the best defender, didn't play. He was up sick with food poisoning, and then there were some rumors that the whole team was sick, and Lincoln Riley came out and said that wasn't the case. A couple guys were not feeling well, but Ramsey was the only guy out. That's not the reason.
Do you think they were sick in like actuality, or were they just sick and disgusted with the unfair treatment from the Big Ten to have the temerity to schedule a game 7 days after their previous game at a time that was different?
The 9 a.m. Yeah.
Were they just sickened by obviously the unfair treatment?
I don't think that was it. I think there was actual food poisoning going on, but it was not some widespread thing, but they looked like crap. That the defense, it's kind of like 2022 where the offense can just score a lot and the defense looks crappy.
It's so, like, I think now we're how many years into the Danton Lynn era at USC? It's year second. Two.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, the positive effects of UCLA are starting to wear off on them.
I think I texted you like the UCLA stink is still on.
No, yeah. I think actually if we're going by historical patterns, this is the Lincoln Riley stink slowly being applied to him. Like, this is the application of the Lincoln Riley dog shit smeared all over the face.
But Illinois, you got to give credit, bounce back. Like, obviously, I mean, one of the most humiliating losses like we've seen in the Big Ten, and they came back and played tougher, way tougher. You don't want to lose twice, and Illinois made sure they didn't do that. So We got the Illini way up at number 5. I don't know. Do you think they should be that high or it's tough?
It's the fine. The Big Ten after the top 4-ish is kind of a big drop off. USC, I will note this, for those who have found Lincoln Riley to be an inordinate dum-dum for many, many years, yours truly. One thing he did in this game signals to me that he is maybe not as stupid anymore as he used to be. When they scored to go down by 8, 31-23, they went for 2, which is the advanced math way of doing things, which has not been Lincoln Riley's way. They clearly a little bit of a change there to optimize efficiency, optimize winning outcomes. So, you know, if you're looking for those little indicators, obviously they lost the game, but Lincoln Riley, not as stupid as he used to be.
Yeah, there's something there. All right, number 9, we've got.
Number 9, we've got Iowa Hawkeyes.
And they were hosting number 3.
Indiana Hoosiers. Indiana won 20-15.
You want to talk about fractions, David? Like what's Indiana's fractions? Dude, we got this wrong.
Indiana got Iowa'd so hard in this game. Like just and like an absurd final score. 20-15. What's happening out here? Fernando Mendoza's running out to take a safety at the end of the game. What is going on? Okay? Stop it. Now, we had the line of 7.5, but some people had it at 6.5, and that mattered at the end of this game. It should have been 20-13. But just an absurd game. Really annoying to watch because it felt like Indiana was doing a lot and then just wouldn't score. And over and over and over again, they were like driving fine, and then they just couldn't get over the hump. Yeah. They had, I think, 2 turnovers on downs. It was one on a 4th-and-1 that was late on their own 48. But there was another one early where they were on. They got it down to the Iowa 27, and they had a 4th-and-1 and didn't get it. It's just like, come on. But no, I mean, it felt like Indiana controlled the game, but they were in danger of being Iowa'd the entire time.
Yeah.
Which... I don't know. I've only watched 2 full seasons of this league, but like I really don't want to watch any more Iowa football. It's such a just tough watch all the time. And this one was too. Stop taking something beautiful and making it ugly. Okay. Indiana football, beautiful. This beautiful, delicate little thing. I love it so much. And then Iowa, just Iowing all over it. No, none of that.
And quarterback got hurt, right?
Gronowski? Yeah.
Gronowski, yeah.
Yeah, the good old Hank Brown came in.
Ooh, Hank Brown, nice. Yeah, how does Indiana go from scoring 63 to scoring 20?
They had to play Iowa.
We felt the best about our picks for the Iowa game, Indiana game, and USC, Illinois. And Illinois looked completely different than that Indiana game, and Indiana looked completely different from that game. So both teams looked... whatever, maybe that game was an anomaly, but nothing fed over. I think my bookie asked me for our 2 top picks, and I gave him those 2. We got them both wrong. So
that's beautiful. I love it.
Good for us. You know.
Yeah, we're good at what we do.
Number 8.
Maryland Terrapins. They run a bye.
Yeah, I don't know if we should have them up that high. They haven't lost yet. Haven't really played tough opponents yet, but we'll see. I mean, a young freshman quarterback. We'll see after this week, but we got number 7,
Washington Huskies,
and they were hosting number 1,
Ohio State Buckeyes, bunch of falling nuts. Got it. Ohio State won 24-6. This was an absurdly low score for a long, long time. Washington just kind of dirtying up the game, I think, in a lot of ways. I never really got the impression that Washington was going to walk away with a win unless something insane happened.
Yeah.
I think they held it to the level it could be for as long as humanly possible. And then I won't say the floodgates opened. It's just Ohio State, you know, kind of stopped shooting itself in the foot and just kind of
it was inevitable. You knew what was going to happen, like it, inevitability.
It was eventually going to happen. Washington just really couldn't score. You know, there just wasn't, and it's not that like I really do think a lot of it just comes down to relative talent. Ohio State has a bunch of NFL players. Washington's got a couple, and that kind of told the tale. I like Jed Fish as a coach, despite the pianos falling on his head very frequently. I don't think he's, I think he's like a solid, when you factor in everything, like a solid B plus, but I think to out scheme Ohio State, when you've got such a talent disadvantage, you probably need to be an A. And I think the thing with Fish is if he keeps recruiting the way he's recruiting there, they're going to close that gap to some extent. It's never going to be, they're never going to be on equal footing with Ohio State, but they can be better than they were in this game talent wise. And so, you know, I don't think it's a hopeless cause, but I think they're still at the kind of beginning stages of rebuilding the talent, like to that level. Obviously it's still a very good team, I think, Washington this year, but they're not there yet. And I think that game kind of showed that, where, yeah, they can be competitive for a little while, but the talent's going to win out at a certain point.
I think this early on, Washington actually moved the ball pretty well. And three, I think fairly early, like first half red zone trips, and they got 6 points out of it. So I think it was one of those things where they got to move the ball and then the Ohio State defense stiffened. And they just, it didn't even look like they were close to scoring. It's like, so how did you get the ball into the red zone? And you just, and then they had the, did you remember the fake field goal? I don't know if you saw that. It was horrible. I don't know. That was that piano worthy? I'm not sure, but.
I don't mind taking risks, but that, it just didn't look good. No. Yeah. I mean, I would say with, so the other thing is, I think Ohio State's red zone defense is once again very, very good. And it was like the best and elite, like most elite part of that very elite team last year. So I think there is something where, like, you know, on that fake field goal, I mean, where were they placed at that moment? I think they were at the Ohio State 27. Does that sound right?
I think so.
It was like a 4th and 14. I think they're thinking, well, if we can score from here, like if you can score from outside the 20 and score, I think that's what you're trying to do against Ohio State. Cause the closer you get, it's almost like the harder it gets. But it was very poor execution on that fake field goal.
But Ohio State still looking good. We still have them number one. Then we're going to, we had number six.
Michigan Wolverines. And they were on a bye.
Oh, yeah, they were on a bye. We already talked about Illinois. And the last game we need to talk about, number four.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
And number two.
The Oregon Ducks. Quack, 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 quack. You know, I'd be willing to put Oregon number one.
Could.
Yeah. Dan Lanning, man, he's the picture for this week's show because he looked like a fully insane, and you know, maybe some other things that you might want to call him after the game. This was, I think, a sneakily dominant performance from Oregon. They won in overtime 30-24.
Double overtime.
Yeah, and they could have lost. Like because they went for two, missed it, and if Penn State had not immediately then thrown an interception and scored and made two, they would have won. But Oregon, I thought, was the far, far better team in this game. They were consistently able to drive. I don't think, I could be wrong, I don't think they went three and out once, or it was at the very end of the game. They went 4 plays, 3 yards, but that was just because they were trying to kill the clock to get to overtime. And they were shutting down Penn State a lot early. Penn State finally got some things going in the second half. I saw, like, the announcers were saying it, and then people on Twitter were saying it. It's like they need to be down or need to be in a struggle fest to, for them to finally open up the offense. And you could almost see it in real time. We're like, oh, okay, suddenly they can take shots, and they can do things downfield, and they can throw the ball. But it's like they've just got this governor on the offense for, you know, like where they're just trying to control the game and, like, I don't know, run the ball excessively. But Oregon, I mean, Oregon, even early on, I mean, they turned it over on downs on the second drive. They went 32 yards. They missed a field goal in the third drive, but they went 46 yards. They scored a field goal on the fourth drive. They went 51 yards. Even at the end of the half, they went 30 yards. And that was just the first half when they only scored 3 points. In the second half, things really got going for Oregon. I just thought they looked way better. I think Dante Moore, you know, I had concerns coming into the game because we hadn't seen him in like this sort of environment.
He looked amazing.
He looked awesome against a defense that's going to try to trick you, going to try to do weird stuff. Looked really comfortable rolling out, looked really comfortable keeping his eyes up and downfield. Wasn't just immediately running the ball the way you might expect for a guy who hasn't had a ton of game reps at this point. Obviously, I think the tutelage he received in his 1 year at UCLA just paying major dividends at this point. UCLA product Dante Moore was just, I mean, I thought he was incredible in this game. Drew Aller definitely could have used the year at UCLA.
Yes.
At the working at the knee of Chip Kelly. Cause he doesn't look very good. And his pick at the end was, look, I think it was a bad play call. I think it was a bad decision. They were running that thing into the short side. There wasn't a lot of room for him to even fit that throw in. But also, man, you can't throw that ball like that. You can't think that's open at that point. And it would have had to be a, like, to fit that one in, he would have had to throw it basically perfectly. And he did not. He did not throw that perfectly. But bad play call, bad execution, bad decision by him to ice the game on that pick. But the main thing I was struck by was I thought Oregon was pretty dominant in this one. And if things had gone just a little bit differently in the first half, where their drives, you know, didn't end in the way they did. I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but they were driving the ball really well. If things had just gone a little bit more in their favor on a score perspective, this would have been a 10-point win on the road in a whiteout.
Yeah, no, I agree. This is I got to watch this in Giordano's. We're getting some deep dish pizza after the game, kind of a 2-hour drive back to Chicago. We were watching some in the car and then watching in the restaurant there. And man, that just the rock fight in the beginning was just weird. But I felt like Oregon's offense looked like a competent offense that was just facing a good defense. And for on the Penn State side, it looked like you're calling plays to try to protect your veteran quarterback because you don't trust it just didn't feel right to me. And then
their offensive line was getting abused by Oregon. Yeah. Oregon wasn't like bringing a ton of pressure. It was just man-on-man beats a lot in the run game. Like Penn State couldn't really run the ball.
Which they got two great running backs. And to see But I've had someone that came up to me that like not a big football fan that saw some of the stuff and asked me if like Land Danning was on cocaine or something. And it was like, what? And I'm like, I mean, I don't know. He's on something. I'm not sure what the heck's going on there, but the guy's a psycho, obviously. But I don't know if you saw, and then I think I was sitting next to Connor who, you know, writes for me and it was 3-3 and then Oregon scores two touchdowns. It's 17-3, if I'm not mistaken. And he does the throat slash, you know, on camera. And it's like, that's going to come back to haunt you probably, you know? And, but at the time, if they got a safety, it would have felt like you were never going to be, you know, but to score two touchdowns felt like the game was already done. And so give Penn State credit for coming back and being able to tie it. But it's like, you saw that offense for that stretch and you're like, where the hell was this before? Like, are you playing just to not, you know, like if you played like that the whole time, you know, who knows what could have happened? That you could have got a lead early instead of letting Oregon hang around. They were playing better than you. And then they take the lead and come back. And then it was like, I don't know what was going on in Land Danning's head at that point, but to think that you've got it, you do the throat slash and now it's tied and then it's overtime and you're behind. It's like pretty crazy. Cause Penn State scored the first overtime. Right. And then, takes the lead. And just wild. And so, yeah, that was a crazy, I mean, two really good teams. We'll see. We saw Penn State's offense not be good against some bad teams, or not be great at least. And you want to be great against the kind of crappy teams. And you're worried like, well, what happens when you play a real team? and the offense was putrid for a lot of this game. So I got some concerns with Penn State, but Oregon looks like the real deal. I think both of us thought they would take a little bit of a step back, still be good, really good. But, you know, we thought Ohio State might too. But those two teams both look elite. And Penn State, you still got these questions.
Yeah, and one thing I'd add is, like, I honestly thought Lanning should have kicked the field goal when they scored that second touchdown.
You thought he should kick a field goal? Wow.
Well, the way I was thinking about it was Penn State is not moving the ball at all, so just go up two scores because God knows they're not gonna gonna score more. They're not gonna score twice.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get stuffed on fourth and one. But then it turned out they absolutely needed it. So what do I know? And the other one that I thought was interesting is at the end of the first overtime, they score the touchdown and they didn't go for two right there, because the analytics crowd will tell you that's you want to just end it right there.
But Oregon was better.
But it could have haunted them, because they didn't then get the two on the next time down, which maybe is why they didn't. Maybe they didn't like their 2-point play. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they could have lost the game in the second overtime pretty easily. So I don't know. It was an odd game because it ended up being so close when it didn't feel that close.
Yeah.
Is basically the way I'd put it.
I agree with you there. All right. Well, that's a recap. We got to try to do better on our picks.
Oh, let's talk about the targeting thing, because, this is one where we've gotten so stupid about targeting that we've sort of like reverse engineered it being okay to just hit somebody in the head with your helmet. Where it's like, we used to have just helmet to helmet was a penalty.
Yeah.
Can we bring back helmet to helmet as a penalty and not have targeting if you're like literally headhunting, but can we just bring back helmet to helmet?
We had that on in the restaurant, I think. So we didn't have sound, and then
wasn't in this 8-inch spot right here. It's like, but he's that, bashing into him with the helmet.
Head bounce back. It was like, I don't know how that wasn't. I still don't know.
It doesn't need to be targeting. It can just be helmet to helmet, but it should be a penalty.
It looked like a penalty.
But we've gotten so into like litigating whether or not it's this specific type of thing for targeting that I think we've actually made the game less safe. Because it's like, oh, no. Now everything that isn't this specific thing is fine.
Right.
It's not a penalty. And no. It's like, can we bring back helmet to helmet or unnecessary roughness applying to this in some way? Just so it's a 15-yarder. Not that it needs to be targeting and somebody kicked out of the game. But like, can we just bring back the 15-yarders for some of this crap?
I think unnecessary roughness, one of the greatest penalties ever. Like, that's just unnecessary roughness.
Just like, hey, you're being a dick. Don't be a dick.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we could easily get this back. But it's just, I think people have gotten, and frankly, targeting has gotten like borderline politicized by people. It's like, oh, we're taking away, you know, the what football really is. What are they supposed to aim at? And it's like, okay, you don't want people kicked out of the game. That's fine. But can we just have 15 yarders again for this stuff?
Like, 15 yarders were good.
They were fine. And stop hitting people in the head. You don't need to do it. It doesn't need to happen. It almost never needs to happen.
No. Sorry, I'm going to plug this in here.
Don't hit people in the head with your head. You know?
I get
good
it.
Good rule of thumb.
All right. Are you ready to pick some games?
I was born ready to pick
some games. We got
to
do better.
I don't think we're going to, but yeah.
A couple of 9 a.m.ers. First up, we've got number 17.
Wait, what? Oh, you're doing, what are you doing?
Week 6 picks.
Oh, geez. I was looking at week 5. Sorry. Yeah. 9 a.m. on Big Fox, Wisconsin, Badger at number 20, Michigan Wolverines. Michigan is a 17.5 point home favorite over Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin is ass. Are they ass enough to lose by more than 18 points to Michigan? I kind of think so. I kind of think Michigan could hold them to like 6 points in this game. So Yeah, give me Michigan minus 17.5.
I really believe that Wisconsin is ass. That's why I have them at number 17. My gut says take Michigan. My gut's been very wrong the last couple of weeks. You've been very wrong the last couple of weeks. And you know what one of the stats from last week's picks were?
What?
Of all the games, the only team, the only underdog that didn't cover was Washington. So if you took the points in all every game, you would have went 5 for 6 or whatever it was. So it's a lot of points in a big 10 game.
Meaningless stat. Got it. Okay, cool.
Michigan, no. I'm going to take with Katzen. Badger.
What is the average points scored by Wisconsin in the last two games?
Is it like 10?
12.
12, yeah.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah, it's not good.
We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, we will. We certainly will.
So I guess you just do these because I don't have the sound effects. So
sure. 9 a.m. on the Big Ten Network, number 22, Illinois. Going on the road to take on feisty Purdue. Purdue is a 9.5-point home dog. Give me a reason why I shouldn't just take Purdue and scoop up those points.
So I'm going to take Purdue, but I was thinking USC beat Purdue by 14.
Yep.
USC lost to Illinois by 2. So should Illinois beat Purdue by 12? I don't know what are we doing here?
Transitive property.
Math. Okay. I do feel, I thought Purdue was okay, but they didn't look good.
They did get a bye week just now, though.
They did get a bye. They didn't look good against Notre Dame. But it just seemed to be different home on the road. And is Illinois as bad as they looked at against Indiana? Like, I don't think so. But I kind of think Purdue's offense can score some points. So, and I think Illinois put a lot into the USC game. So I'm going to take Purdue in the points.
Okay.
But
I'll take Purdue as well.
Are you good? Okay. I think I should switch now.
Yeah, you should.
Okay. We got the 12:30 window, three games in this window.
All right. First up, 12:30 p.m. on CBS. Number 7, Penn State traveling to the Rose Bowl to take on UCLA. UCLA is a 24.5-point home dog. I mean, the most important question is what's the money line, right?
Right.
Right. Because we're thinking about that one. UCLA is obviously going to get killed. The question is exactly how killed. And the question is, how equipped is Penn State to kill anybody right now? Like, they could win this one 27-0.
Yes.
And cover. They could also win it 24-6 and not cover. Like, are they going to pour it on? Like, are they capable of pouring it on with the state of their offense? Like, can they score? Like, here's the thing. If they score more than 35, they're going to cover because UCLA is that bad offensively. UCLA parted ways with its offensive coordinator Tuesday night this week. Yes, everyone out there.
So he's been there for a few years or something? Or how long was he there?
No.
How long was he there?
He's been there since April.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He almost lasted a year. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good. He lasted 4 games, and they parted ways with him midweek. He was at practice on Tuesday. He was gone Tuesday night. They're timing's installing a new offense. So my point is UCLA is going to score probably at most 10 points in this game. So if Penn State scores over 35, they're going to cover. Can Penn State do that? Will they do that? Will James Franklin choose to do that, or will they just try to sit on UCLA? Because UCLA is so bad, and there's no point in really trying to exert yourselves.
What do you think?
James Franklin has been prone to not exerting himself, not exerting his team. Give me Penn State.
Wow.
I'm UCLA could get shut out. Like, they might be running a new offense They might have tried to install a new offense this week.
That could be good. The last one stunk.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think anytime you can install an offense and run it 3 days later, I think you've got to try, right?
Yes. Yeah. So if you have a, if you hire like a head coach who's never been like a coordinator before, the one thing you want to do is obviously hire coordinators that have a lot of experience calling plays and stuff. So I'm sure, was it Cinceri? Is that his name? He must Gino have been, Cinceri. Yeah, like years of play calling experience, right? Is that, you know?
Not a minute of play calling
experience. Oh,
yeah.
To go with the rookie head coach that's never been a coordinator mm-hmm. either. Mm-hmm. Wow, so you have like a head coach that's never a coordinator and a coordinator that's never a coordinator. Were there any like position coaches that were coordinated? I don't know where that came from. Mm. Doesn't seem like a good plan. But what I'm going to go back to is, you remember Purdue, was it last year? Yeah, it was last year, I believe. I think they played Illinois and they fired the offensive coordinator. It was at Ryan Walters or whatever, like the head coach who's a defensive guy takes over play calling and they scored like four. They covered the spread, scored a bunch of points, and then they stunk like the rest of the year. Boom. Give me Bruins. Give me 24.5 points. They're going to do something. They're going to figure out some stuff.
Oh, you Even and I both agree. They are going to do something. It yeah. will be interesting. It will be entertaining. It will also more than likely be an absolute chaotic shit show.
Yeah. So the only thing I'm worried about for UCLA covering is that obviously Penn State has the home field advantage here, right? It's going to be kind of loud for the offense.
Uh-huh.
In the Rose Bowl. Hey, but
did you hear it's a blueout?
No.
So a few things here. One, UCLA marketing is marketing this as a blueout. So
when Penn State's, what color are they?
Yeah, they were navy blue. But that's one. Two, there's going to be like 4,000 UCLA fans in attendance.
Yeah.
Total of like 35, and 31 of them will be Penn State.
Well, maybe could they say everyone wears blue when a whole bunch of Penn State people there wear blue. They make it look like it's UCLA fans, even though they probably have white pom-poms cheering for the Nittany Lions.
And three, how close is blue out to what's going to be the result of this game? Like, it's phonically, phonetically.
Blackout, kind of, yeah.
Blowout.
Blowout, too, yeah.
Blue out, blowout.
Oh, okay.
It's past the blue out, blowout.
It's the past tense, yes.
Yeah. Not good. Not good. Not good. Bad marketing. Anyway, UCLA is going to get killed. I've got Penn State here. He's got UCLA.
All right. Next up.
12:30 on the Big Ten Network. Washington traveling to Maryland. Maryland is a 6.5-point home dog. Sorry, Huskies. Maryland outright. Zero doubt in my mind.
Yeah, I like Maryland a lot in this one, too, with the points. I don't know about winning the game, but we've seen what Washington lost at Rutgers last year. It's a long trip. There's going to be some kind of hangover from the Ohio State game. Yeah, the 6.5 points. And Maryland's young quarterback looks really good. You're going to have two really good young quarterbacks going at it in this one, but I'm going to take the home team.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, next up, also at 12:30 on the Big Ten Network, Louisiana Monroe traveling to Northwestern. Northwestern is an 11.5-point home favorite. Let's look at UL Monroe.
Why do we have this? What is this for?
I don't know. UL Monroe is 3-1 on the season. They have won games against St. Francis, UTEP, and Arkansas State. They lost 73-0 to Alabama on the road. Mm. I guess I'll take Northwestern. I don't know. I really don't, but I'll take Northwestern.
I'm going to go with my theme of taking the points.
Fair enough.
They beat a UTEP.
What is a UTEP? Who can say?
They're probably better than UCLA.
Probably. Who isn't?
And I'm getting 11.5 points.
Why the hell not?
They lost to Alabama 73-0. What was it? Or who would they lose to?
73-0 to Alabama, yeah.
Okay. I don't think Northwestern's Alabama. I don't think they're that good.
Fair.
I don't know. Sorry, Griffin, Dick about Monroe, but give me Monroe.
Hell yeah, baby.
Yeah.
All right, next up at 1 p.m. on FS1, Michigan State, the Fighting Aiden Childses, traveling to Nebraska. Nebraska's an 11.5-point home favorite. I see no reason that Nebraska is 11.5 points better than Michigan State, even at home. So I'm taking Michigan State here. I mean, I think I'll have Nebraska winning, but like a touchdown, not 11.5 points.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, is Nebraska 11.5 points better than like a box of Oreos? I don't know. Like maybe, maybe not. That's a lot of points for. No, like, Aiden Childs hasn't been, turning the ball over much. Like there's some, they look improved. I got to see them on the road at USC. They definitely look better. I feel like they could just keep this one close. I like Nebraska to win, but 7 or 10 points. 11.5, I'm like, all right, just give me the points in this one.
Yeah, agreed.
And last one.
Finally, at 4:30 on NBC, Minnesota traveling to Columbus, number one Ohio State. Ohio State's a 23.5-point home favorite. I know you're just taking the points this week, but I got to take Ohio State here because I'm pretty sure Minnesota's butt.
Yeah. No, I'm actually going to agree with you. I think Minnesota's butt. And the only team that covered last week was Ohio State, like as a favorite. So I'll stick with that theme and I'll go all non-Ohio State covers or underdogs covering. And then just give me Ohio State because I do think Minnesota's not that good. You go on the road and, I feel like Ohio State didn't get to play like their game as much as they wanted to on the road. There was just more like, you're just trying to like get through this and survive. And they pulled away and stuff, but I feel like then you can come home and sort of like stretch your legs a little bit and do all your Ohio State stuff. And Minnesota will just be the punching dummy. So yeah, I think Ohio State's going to cover this one.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Nice.
Go team.
Yay. So I guess we should take a break.
Sure. We'll be back in a minute.
Okay, it doesn't go that long. You always go that too long. We can't do voicemails. I'm not looking at the chat. So how's the chat going? Is the chat?
I don't know, man.
You're not looking at the chat. See, all this stuff I normally do, that David, is not doing.
Screw that. Man.
Okay.
I'm a fill-in. All right. Where are we?
Okay, we did Foster's Island. I made that clip of that. Didn't really get much,
The number of times I've sung on this show and you didn't clip shit. And then the one time you break out your dulcet tones and suddenly we get a clip.
I can't really.
We get it posted on Twitter.
Yeah. I don't know, man. You can do it. You know how to do this stuff.
Jesus.
This is from Leo. So.
Aren't we on Quinn?
Oh, maybe. Is it Quinn? Did we not do?
I don't think we did Quinn. What time did we do? We did this on Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
So it's the Feldman one.
That was a question for Dave. Is there a polite way to ask Bruce Feldman?
No. That was this is after that. This is Quinn 07. It's the one that's subject line Feldman.
Okay. Oh, Feldman. Dave, when does UCLA pull out the big guns to set the record straight on Chip's tenure? When do we fire the bazooka and unveil Chip as the fraud he is? When do we expose the bad faith game these talking heads are playing? When do we unleash our troll supreme to take them down? When does David Woods begin his campaign to glorious victory? Quinn 07, PS, watch Aliens Earth. I need another season.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've done a lot. I mean, I've tried my best here.
Really?
I don't know what else. I mean, there's other stuff to be done, I suppose. I'll consider the situation. To his point about Alien Earth, yeah, it's pretty good.
I haven't seen it, but I love alien stuff. So
it's, these are like, it, Alien is like sort of the backdrop of the show. It's a lot more about other stuff. But worth a watch. It's interesting okay. sci-fi mess.
Okay.
Frank in Sacramento. Question again. T. Boone Pickens died in 2019. 5 years later, Oklahoma State football stunk. Will it take that long for Oregon Ducks football to stink after Phil Knight goes to heaven?
I'm assuming Phil Knight's going to like set up some trust or something. It's just
I would
like,
imagine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, but, and I don't think Oregon's going to stink.
Like they've also risen far beyond where Oklahoma State was ever.
They pushed the ceiling a lot higher. Oklahoma State was just like out kicking its own coverage.
Yeah.
Oregon's like elite.
Yeah.
All right. This is a text message. All good, Ari. Back the pack and place some bets. No, oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. That was not private. The right one. That's sorry about that.
It's from Dave. Go for it.
No one cares about the weather.
They no, want the real reason people live in California.
Subject oh, order. Sorry about that. That's a text. I'm reading that to my phone. So it's a little bit different than I'm normally doing. So why people live in California? Because we had that discussion and Dave went off on people that live other places and stuff and pissed off a lot of our
listeners. That's not what I did.
Totally did. No one cares about the weather. They want college football as soon as they wake up on Saturday morning. I've been up for 3.5 hours and there's still no football on. Really bring down the sailgating vibes. How do East Coast people live like this every week?
It super sucks.
I mean, growing up there, I never noticed it. But then once I moved here, you're like, oh my God, this is so much better.
It's so much better having 9 a.m. football.
Yeah. And like some people like the central and like you're like in the middle, like it's 11 a.m. Like that's just dumb. Like noon, whatever, you know, but like you got to stay up till like 3 a.m. and watch games. Like, but that's not even Hawaii. You know, come on.
No, it was made for the West Coast. Yeah. 9 a.m. till about 10, 11 p.m.
There is a bias, but in many cases, it helps us when it comes to kickoff times.
Yep. This is also from Dave. New respect, motor East Coast fans. I have been drinking for 14 hours. How do they do this every week? Acknowledgement, Dave. P.S. Please thank the man playing Beastie Boys outside Husky Stadium for 5 hours after the game. Not sure what I would have done without him. Carver Willis should be Heisman favorite. UW outscored number one Ohio State when he was in. Once injured, he was out. If gambling is now acceptable, why not drinking? If Huskies not win, I don't want to win Survivor Swim. I am winner. Jay, shout out to Stalin and Tequila. I was overwhelmed with Jello shots. Sad day. Pac-12 would never Big Ten Vader. When we go back to Pac, 5 a.m. wake up no good. Thank you, Dave.
David didn't have a stroke. He was just reading that as it was written.
Correct.
Thank you, Dave. Good stuff there. We got a text from Webfoot. Fun fact, Lincoln Riley is now 0-12 against the spread outside of the state of California. Okay. Unrelated for Dave, do you know what would be even funnier than UCLA going 0-12 this season? Going 1-11 with the only win coming against USC, and that win eliminates them from the playoffs.
Obviously. Now, obviously, that would be the funniest possible outcome.
Yeah.
It's
the funny thing they're going to make the playoffs is that's funny to start.
That's also funny because USC is it's riding a bullet to 7-5 right now. But
like 2 weeks ago, you said their floor was like 9-3.
And now they're going 7-5.
I was like, I didn't even think that. You're like, their floor is 9-3. I'm like, what? No.
7-5, baby. Yeah, that would be funny. You're right, Paul. All right, this is from Colt. Another Bruin letdown. Hi, Ryan and Dave. Another weekend, another Bruin loss. At this point, they're struggling to even match the mediocrity of this podcast. Anyway, Dave, some questions for you. We at least saw some new offensive looks with Nico getting more QB runs called for him, which was a welcome change. But why can't Tino dial up a few more wrinkles? Through 4 games, I don't think they've even tried snapping on a second clap to bait an offsides for a free 5 yards in free play. Nico does his half-hearted fake claps, but is our offensive line really incapable of holding still for a fake clap and then reacting to the second clap? Is Tino in over his head? Why can't he manage a 2-minute drill? And why does the offense feel just as ineffective as the defense? Thanks for answering. A truly defeated Bruin.
Maybe great they should consider, Colt. They should fire that guy. Oh, wait.
I will say, the 2-minute drill that UCLA ran at the end of this game was the second worst 2-minute drill I've ever seen after the one they ran against New Mexico to end the first half. I think Tino, wherever he ends up, will need to do some learning about, like, you know, what do you do on a 2-minute drill? What's the goal? Are you trying to score? Are you trying to eat the clock? You know, there's just like, is tempo a thing? Does it exist? Do you use timeouts? What is a timeout? Like, these are questions that I think he needs to answer next job he has.
Yes. Well, good stuff there. Thanks for that. Yeah. Pretty unfortunate email that you're just talking trash about a guy that got fired. So, I mean, he must feel terrible.
Yeah.
Colt. It's like kicking a man when he's down. He just got fired and you're like writing it on the bottom.
Mutually parted ways, Ryan. Mutually parted ways.
Week 5 Survivor Pool results. I forgot to mention this at the beginning, but thanks again, Matthew, for doing this. So if you're putting your picks, if you're still alive, from 252, we are down to 32. 37 entered week 4 and 32 survived. No invalid submissions, which was great. And everybody that was eligible submitted. So there was no picks. So the winners, 32 winners, 19 picked Indiana, 10 picked Ohio State, 2 Northwestern, 1 Minnesota, and the losers, UCLA, of course. I think they've knocked out the majority of everybody, and then Washington. One person picked Washington.
Okay.
That seems a little aggressive.
Yes.
I mean, is that person playing chess and we were all playing checkers?
Possibly.
But yeah, only one surviving player has not yet picked Maryland. Good for them. And there are 5 people left who have not yet taken Purdue, which could be a problem. There are now 2 teams still available to every surviving player, Penn State and UCLA. 4 people took a gamble on UCLA and they're going home. Seriously, people? So thank you, Matthew, for that.
Beautiful. All right. Next up, we have West Texas Mike. Man, Ryan is angry. I haven't seen Ryan this frothing mad since the infamous Toa Lobendon shotgun snap against Cal, a snap that went over JT Daniels' head and bounced around wildly in the end zone before it was ultimately corralled for a safety. Cal Bears' 1-point win, breaking their 14-game losing streak to USC, was the lone black mark on Ryan's meticulously planned homecoming extravaganza, on the 50th anniversary of his graduation, no less. Such a humiliating loss by Clay Helton on the homecoming king's great day would not stand, as that's when Ryan finally called for Clay Helton's firing. Is the Illinois loss Lincoln Riley's wild-ass end zone snap? Also, yeah, the furtiveness about when USC was flying out shows that Lincoln Riley refuses to stop worrying about all the wrong things. Is this the final straw for Ryan Abraham? Are you ready on this here program to call for what we all know needs to happen, a Lincoln Riley extension?
Well, first, thanks, West Texas Mike. So that was I was on the reunion committee for my 25th reunion for USC. I remember they played Cal. I didn't remember that was a loss. I didn't remember that it was like some whatever happened. I don't remember that stuff. It's so funny when someone brings it up. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that was cool. I wouldn't say I went on a rant on our Tunnel Vision show. I don't think it's angry. I'm just like telling you what I thought. It was pretty bad. Remember when Deshaun Foster, RIP, was taking people like David in the media and not letting them do things at practice, and you knew the team wasn't going to be very good. You're like, well, what do you worry about that for? USC flew out on Thursday, which makes sense because it was going to be an early game. But Lincoln Riley had kind of defended the fact that they like flying out the day before. So he changed it before the Illinois game. And I still don't have a reason why. I know it's not like I haven't found any good reasons why you would not. They had to keep it quiet. Like the media people told us, I wasn't there, but the other guys at practice, hey, they're going to leave Thursday, but don't say anything. What are you worrying about that for? Like, why is that a thing? Like, who cares? I know it's not easy to switch charters once you already schedule them and all that stuff. But yeah, so his point, why are you worried about that? You got to worry about beating Illinois. And they didn't end up beating Illinois. But yeah, I wouldn't say angry. Just I was like, that was a very winnable game.
You would say enraged. You would say frothing at the mouth, possibly ready to commit crimes.
I don't care that much. I'm just saying, like, all the talk that you had in the offseason about how you made things better, the David Woods of the world saying this, the floor for this team is 9-3. You needed to go beat a team that just lost by 53 points the week before. Like, don't look like ass on the road. Sorry, Griffin. And allow, you don't want the other team to have the bounce back moment. You want it to be that one loss turns into two, and you just gave them, you gave them an opportunity.
But don't you think that was a product of the Big Ten just being unfair in its scheduling? I mean, obviously USC should have won that by like 3 or 4 scores, but if not for the fact that it was at 9 a.m.
Can you believe that USC took the lead in that game? Like, no business having a lead.
Zero.
In that game.
No.
They were winning with under 2 minutes left.
Insane.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, a follow-up from West Texas, Mike. Also, would you tell Coach Hyde next time that USC fans who listen to your show aren't the kind who kick their dogs or slap around their wives? Please? Jesus.
Oh, okay. I'll pass that along. Please this do. Is from Matt, next UCLA coach. In parentheses, I don't know what to do. That. Dave, what's the feasibility UCLA could hire a coach with a dual title of football operations director so they would not only be the head coach but also have complete autonomy when it on the football side of UCLA athletics? Martin Jarmon would retain his AD position for everything other than football, so there's no buyout needed for him. There's a new head coach slash whatever the title would report directly to Frank. The new control could stroke the ego of coaches such as Urban Meyer to take the job, knowing he has complete control. Their salary would be a combination of head coach and UCLA grand poobah, so it could pacify the regents as well. I just don't see a head coach at UCLA being an ego stroke enough to land someone north of the talent a Carl Durrell type could offer. If not, what do you feel could make the job more attractive at this point in UCLA football glory? From Matt. Hey, man, to be fair, Carl Durrell was a wide receiver coach for the Denver Broncos, who had won a Super Bowl at some point. Not when he was there.
A far superior hire to what they just did. So what I would say for just generally this thought, because it's been talked about, not just by like random fans, but by people who might have some hand in decision-making. I think it's kind of dumb. I think the idea of retaining an athletic director is getting paid $2 million a year to not manage football, the only part of the athletic department that makes any money, I guess basketball, but really, what are you paying him for?
Yeah.
Why do you still have him? And as I pointed out, I think on this show, but like other times, is any head coach who's an Urban Meyer type or whatever, they're going to ask, why are you retaining that guy? Like, what's the point? And it reflects poorly on you as an institution. Yeah. If you're not willing
sucks.
To just,
why is he here?
If you're not willing to just eat whatever the buyout is and fire a guy, then what else are you going to put up with? You know, what other incompetent boobery is going on there?
Competent boobery.
Nice. Incompetent boobery. So I think like once you make the determination that a guy cannot be in charge of the only aspect of his position that makes any money, then you've made a decision that that guy shouldn't have his job anymore. Not let's reassign him. Like what are we doing at that point? Are we doing like Milton with Office Space? Are we just going to, you know, put him down in the basement with a stapler? And then at some point we're just going to fix the glitch and stop paying him. What are you doing? Just it costs you eat to fire incompetent people who aren't doing good things and are costing you money are good costs. Like these are like the costs that build your business. Yeah. You pay people generously to go away when they don't do their jobs well. So yeah. I think it's all like, you know, it's people love it. It's like four-dimensional chess and they like thinking about all these different ways you can, you know, reinvent the wheel. It's really simple. You've had, you know, really bad management of these different, you know, programs. And if you feel the same way, then the solution is easy. and obvious. You get rid of the guy. And then you hire a new guy. And in the meantime, you may have to hire a football coach without an AD. And if you want to say to the new football coach, hey, you get to have a say in who your AD is going to be. He's still going to be your boss, but you'll have a say in who it's going to be. Then great. That's happened before. That's happened in real life. But this stuff about like, oh, the AD is going to be in charge of everything besides football. That's not a real life thing. Like, I mean, even at Stanford, it's like, I think Andrew Luck still reports to Bernard. What's his face? Like, I don't think this is a real thing. So I don't know. I mean, I think end of the day, if they determine that Martin Jarman should not be in charge of football anymore, then they've determined that Martin Jarman shouldn't be the athletic director anymore.
Yeah, I don't think it makes sense to split it, but I think Martin Jarman needs more time. I think you have to, you know, maybe give him a little incentive and some more responsibilities. Maybe he could call some plays for football, or
maybe put him in charge of like a broader purview. Like, he's in charge of the university. Like, just make him the chancellor.
Oh, you know,
succession plan with Julio Frank. You know, Martin Jarman walks in.
I like it, but like it to too. Be fair, but like, I get the point is they're trying to make the job more attractive. Unfortunately, I don't even think you'd want that. Like, now you need like an extra head coach. Like, you need your general manager to be super powerful too. Like, instead of giving more power to one guy, it's almost like you need a really good head coach, but then also this great personnel staff to figure out all the other crap that it's really hard for a head coach to be able to do. So I think you don't need to consolidate power. You need to like have more good people. It's like more good hires are necessary. You can have a great head coach, and if you have a crappy personnel department that doesn't know if this kid comes in your office and said, UTEP offered me $1 million, and you're like, that's bull crap, they didn't, or we need to keep you, we're going to pay you this. Like, you have to figure all that stuff out now. Just retaining your own players and knowing which ones to let go if they're asking for too much, and knowing which ones that you need to overpay for, and how you manage all that stuff. Like, I think you need extra people for that, not one person to do even more shit.
Wow. Okay.
But yeah, you should fire Jarman, obviously, and don't, you know.
Yeah.
Football's the most important thing, even at a basketball school like UCLA. If your AD is not involved in football, he's not your AD.
You know, I need to bring that up for the Big Ten guys who are listening, because they're not familiar with my perspective and the general perspective on this from anybody you talk to. But even at UCLA, and at UNC, and at Kentucky, and all these schools that are quote-unquote basketball schools, football is the straw that serves the drink. It is, first and foremost, it's still the main revenue-producing part of the university, of the sports program. But second, fan interest is way more profound on the football side, even for UCLA, even with the state of the football program. Like, when football is, you know, doing well, or relatively well here. We're at UCLA. We got to lower our standards. But relatively well, like, our site, way more interest in football than basketball. And that's just the reality of college athletics right now. College football is the thing. And so even at a basketball school, you got to get football right. I think the only one where it might be even slightly different is Duke. And that's a very, very unique case. But yeah. I think everything else, including Indiana, football, it's football, it's football all the time.
I think it's Alex. Are you next? I think you're next.
He's next. Didn't I just read the last one? Did I do it? No, you did it. All right. Life on the line. Hello, Dave and Ryan. David, we all know Martin Jarman must go, and it's past the point of no return. If a witch put a hex on you that you will die if Jarman gets fired or, quote, mutually steps away before the next coaching hire was made, but he was hexed that he must say and do anything you tell him, how would you try and keep yourself alive? You're probably dead either way, but what's your Hail Mary here?
Wait, hold on. The hex is
that I will die if Jarman gets fired or, quote, mutually steps away.
Okay.
And but so he must say or do anything I tell him.
So you're trying to prevent, you want him, you have to put words in his mouth so he doesn't get fired.
I'm confused. I would probably just hire Jed Fish, but I don't know. This one's complicated for me, Alex. Let's simplify next time.
Because he doesn't
watch the end of a show.
Because you don't want him. You want him to get fired,
I don't want him to make the next coaching hire. So yes. It's a difficult one for me, because I think part of the problem is him making another coaching hire. It's just my feeling, it's going to unnecessarily limit the candidate pool. So I don't know, Alex. That's a tough one for me.
He didn't hire Chip, right?
No.
So here's what you would make Martin Jarmon say. UCLA, we're in Los Angeles. We're proud. Not a basketball school like David Woods just
said. We're bringing back Chip Kelly.
No, not at all. This was a disaster, and that's on me. We had a very unique situation. We put a lot of resources into bringing Chip Kelly into this program and needed to part ways with him earlier than we did. And what ends up happening is we were left holding the bag at a really inopportune time. We went with the Bruin legend, and we value Deshaun Foster, what he's able to do, but obviously wasn't the right man to lead us where we need to go. I need to do better as the AD. I failed all of you, and I'm going to do better. We are going to get a coach that UCLA is going to be proud of. All of our fans are going to be proud of. We're going to do an exhaustive search. We're going to fight like hell to not go 0-12 this season. And we're going to do a big search, and we're going to bring somebody that you guys are all be proud of. And the Bruins are going to be back winning championships and doing all the things that UCLA deserves. This was on me. I'm getting better. We're going to go forward and make this happen. That would probably not get him fired, right? Like,
I will say that was a very good one. I was waiting for the punchline at the end of it.
No. Yeah. I was trying to be serious. Like,
I know. And it was really good. But the punchline at the end of it would have been when you were saying, we hired a UCLA legend. It didn't work out. So what we're going to try to do is hire a USC legend, Jack Del Rio.
Was the other Fisher? You could do
Jeff Fisher.
Jeff Fisher. One of those, the ones that you love. But I think if you're the AD, like if you're like self-deprecating like that, and you just say, "Hey, own it." Like, is this a weird situation? I should have fired him earlier.
I think for his personality type, that would be akin to ego death. Like, I don't think he'd be able to do it.
But if you want to keep your job, do you think that would help him keep his job? Like, if they're really thinking about firing him?
100%. I will say this to anybody actually in life. A little bit of admission of fault and a little bit of humility goes a long way.
Yeah. I think
we talked about this with the USC reporter who had the bad AP ballot
yes.
a couple weeks ago. If you can just admit fault, if you have that capability, if your personality type allows it, that you can just say, "Oh crap, my bad. I made a mistake." People want to give grace. Like that's like an inherent feeling is I don't want other people to feel bad. Like, you don't want people to be like, "Oh crap." You want to immediately say, "Oh no, don't worry about it. No big deal." And so if somebody provides you a heartfelt, "I screwed this up. This was totally my fault. I did not make the right choice. We're going to do better this time. We're focused on the right things. We're going to listen to the right people, and we're going to make a better choice." You'd say, "Oh, okay. Fuck. All right, fine." Like, even if you were like pretty angry about it beforehand, it goes a long way. And I think people underestimate exactly how far it'll go. If you just admit you screw up.
Yeah. No, I think I took it seriously. I didn't want you to get hexed. So that's what I would tell him. If I didn't want you to get hexed, that's what I would have Martin Jarmon say.
Yeah. That would be a good thing to say.
Yeah. He's probably not going to say it.
No.
No. This is a text message. "Dear Dave and Ryan, if the fate of the universe depends on the..." Wait, is this... We read this one? This is a different one. Why are all these like... We're all dying in these situations. What's going on here? "The fate of the the success of the following options, which would you choose among these fine choices?" Okay, so the fate of the universe, everyone's going to die. A, Lincoln Riley defense getting a stop on a potential game-winning drive. B, Mario Cristobal's clock and game management winning you the game. C, James Franklin beating a top 10 team at home.
Jesus. I think it's a Lincoln Riley defense.
They had a couple stops last year.
They've done that. LSU. Like, they've LSU, done that.
Yeah.
I don't know that Mario Cristobal's clock management has ever won them a game. And has Dean Franklin ever beaten a top 10 team at home?
I don't know. I don't. He doesn't have a good record.
It's got to be Lincoln Riley's defense.
I think Cristobal's is last. I think that
Cristobal, oh, good God, cannot be first.
No. His bonus question, you're a young 21-year-old man living in Independence, Missouri in 1836. You're setting out on the Oregon Trail with your crew. You need to pick the crew leader and the crew sheriff. Which Big Ten coach are you picking for the job and why? And which coaches would you not pick under any circumstances?
Okay.
Oregon Trail, you could die a million ways.
Probably crew need to be leader and crew sheriff? I don't even know what a crew sheriff is. Let's just do a crew leader.
Yeah. This is a lot.
All right. Obviously not Lincoln Riley. Obviously not the departed Deshaun Foster. I think obviously not Jed Fish. Dan Lanning?
Potentially. I mean, he could be like the crew sheriff, I think.
Correct.
So he's yeah.
Kirk Ferentz.
As a leader?
He seems like a somebody who was on the Oregon Trail. Matt Rhule. No.
No. Kirk Ferentz is like, he would be up there, I think.
Kirk Cignetti?
Like, he could be the sheriff too, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know about I don't know if you want those guys leading, because then you'll be like, let's attack all those Indians. Like, maybe we can just let those ones go. Like, they're friendly to us. No, we're attacking them all.
Brett?
Yeah, I don't know.
Loxley? James Franklin?
I'm also thinking,
who is the fattest one? Because if you get caught in the Donner Pass, right?
Oh, you need, like, reserves.
Yeah. Well, you might need to eat him. Right?
I could do like a James Franklin or Kirk Ferentz for like the leader, and then like Cignetti or Landanning for for the sheriff.
Good answer. And then we won't get into which one's fattest so we can eat them. All right, this one's next. POC hiring. David, you are the new UCLA AD bestowed with the powers to hire the new head coach. A prestigious executive search firm did an exhaustive evaluation to provide the four most qualified candidates. 1, Chip Kelly. 2, Rick Neuheisel. 3, Lincoln Riley. 4, Clay Helton. Who are you hiring and why? Thank you for this, POC Jock. I really do appreciate the question. And that's all the time we have today. Well, you can't hire Chip Kelly again. Can't hire Clay Helton. So here's the question for me. Slick Rick Neuheisel or Lincoln Riley? Here's the reason I'm thinking
gloves.
About...
Neuheisel has gloves.
Here's the reason that I think Rick Neuheisel, at this moment in time, makes some sense. In an NIL era where the most important job for the head coach is possibly raising money, I don't know that there's many better than Rick Neuheisel at donor relations. Have you seen that man golf? He could golf every day. At some points during his UCLA tenure, he did. I'm going Slick Rick.
Love it.
Slicky Ricky, baby.
If we've done anything over the last 10 years or whatever doing this show, you went from Slick Rick is like in the, you know, should be in the seventh layer of hell or whatever, to now you would hire him as UCLA's head football coach.
Absolutely.
I feel like I've talked you into this.
Yeah.
I don't know him well. I've done like his radio thing a couple times.
They figured out the
really
gloves.
Liked him.
They figured out the gloves since
they have gloves.
Yeah. They've got gloves now. So they don't
still got
worry.
The Chip Kelly budget for food, you know, lobster tails.
Yeah. Gloves and lobster. What else do you need for a football program?
Love it.
Oh, practice plans in on time? We're not going to have those anymore. But there'll be a lot of money.
I love it.
Right.
I think it was our last one.
That was great.
Did you look in the chat at all or no?
No, I didn't look in the chat and I'm not going to.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm sure the chat's great. All those questions you have in there, we didn't get to see them. I'll look at them later.
You can look in the chat. You can pull up the YouTube.
I could.
You're capable.
I'm, you know, I'm remote, man.
What does that mean? So am I.
Because I do this stuff every week. I figured you'd do it for once.
Mine doesn't, like, feed into my little program. Actually, it does. Yeah. I just noticed. Oh, I could have been doing this stuff the whole time. Look, I'll show West Texas Mike right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could have been doing that the whole time. Oh, yeah.
You don't want a guy to go get charged with it.
You're already committing war crimes? Hell yeah.
We did have a lot of like hypothetical, like, here's the way.
I gotta get a screenshot of that one. You're already committing war crimes.
Nice.
And I'm gonna make that our picture. There we go.
Are there any questions in there?
I don't know, man. I wasn't marking them as we went.
You could see.
I'm looking. There's a lot of stuff in here.
There's a lot of people in our chat. Look at this, what I have to do all the time.
How about John Gruden for UCLA? No.
Where, okay. So I think the whole like feud or whatever that we have, like the established members of the media, and then there's a few like kind of quirky, weirdo people that cover UCLA, like you, that feel like, you know, Chip Kelly was bad and all this stuff. And but you know, everyone mostly understands.
Got it. There are shills who are buddy with people and then write, like, for example, they write a story about freaks. And every year, for example, that Chip Kelly is employed at UCLA, there are 1 to 2 UCLA freaks on that list. And every year that Chip Kelly is not employed at UCLA, there are no freaks on that list.
Like, just, he recruited well.
Just as a, for instance, as a hypothetical.
He was known as a great recruiter, brought in the freaks or whatever.
Right.
But okay, so the point is, like, hiring a head coach, I think a lot of those people where you're describing as shills are saying it's going to be really hard for UCLA to get somebody very good. And then I'll see a tweet from someone that covers UCLA, and they're like, yeah, John Gruden's not good enough. Urban Meyer, we're too good for that. And you're like, okay. So where is this going to land? Is it going to be a Carl Durrell thing, or is it going to be?
It's not a not good enough. It's a bad fit with like a Gruden. Like I don't mind taking a flyer on some random coordinator. Like I don't mind doing that. I think there are two approaches to hiring a head coach generally. One is you go and hire a proven guy who's going to be good at some level, and you invest the money to do that. And you got to spend big to do that. Okay. And that's an option for most schools. Like, they can go out and hire somebody, either if it's a lower level school, they can hire from the G5, bring somebody up who's a proven winner at that level. Or if it's, you know, a top 20 program, you might be able to go poach somebody. Or you can go and go in with a plan of hiring cycles in a row where you're thinking, we're going to take a stab at this coordinator. We're going to give him enough resources to try to make this work, but we're not going to like completely give him all the leverage in the contract negotiations that we can't then be flexible in 3 years if this doesn't work out.
Yeah.
And then we've allowed ourselves another bite at the apple in 3 years. The problem is, because I think a lot of ADs are trying to win a PR battle when they're hiring, and because they don't have the feeling of security in their positions to have a failed hire on their resume, they don't approach it with that kind of plan. They don't get the buy-in from key stakeholders, say their boss or boosters, when they're approaching it with that plan. And so they then try to sell a hire that is not that first category. It's in the second category, as a first category hire, and they give them the contract, maybe not quite that level, but they'll give them a contract equivalent to that first category.
And you screw yourself, then you can't.
And then you've screwed yourself, and you're just pinning yourself to hope. What I would like UCLA to do is, if they can't go and get a sitting head coach, if they can't invest the money to do so, and they can't put an enticing package together to go try to poach Jed Fish or Jonathan Smith or one of these, you know, guys who's, if they had fired Chip Kelly on time, they would have had a really good shot at in November of 2023. But if they can't go and poach one of those guys, then create flexibility for yourself. Hire a coordinator and have some built-in flexibility with your contract that you create for them.
What about with like Indiana, where you get like a James Madison, so like a lower division?
And that would be another one. Like if you go identify a really good G5 head coach, I think that goes in the first category. Like if they're a G5 head coach who's really good, pay him well. I mean, you don't have to pay him like to pry Jed Fish out of Washington. You'd have to pay a big buyout and probably a sizable contract. I don't think you need to pay Kurt Cignetti or the equivalent of Kurt Cignetti $10 million a year to go to Indiana. I mean, I don't know what they paid him, but it wasn't that. Yeah. You can go find that guy too. I'm just saying that's in one bucket. And then the other bucket is coordinator level hires.
Okay. So you don't think John Gruden's good enough. All right. That's cool. I got
correct.
It.
Yeah, yeah. Correct. all right. I think that was about it. I don't think there are any other major questions here.
Well, good stuff. Thanks everyone for tuning in. A little bit different show, but we'll try to do better on our picks. We at least need some separation. We're just like both sucking and tied. It's like,
yeah,
I was up by one for a couple of weeks and then you tied it and that's pretty much been it. So we need a little excitement in our picks. So I picked some different ones this week. What my philosophy of just take the points.
Take
so the that means points. All the favorites are going to roll.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. I'm Ryan Abraham for David Woods. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.